The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Allen, and I'm joined this morning by Judge Meredith and Judge Falvey. We're convened today to hear arguments in the matter of Patricia Romero versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 19-3687. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for the record.
Good morning. This is Zachary Stoltz of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick for appellant. Joining me today is Barb Cook, also of the firm.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltz.
Ronan Morris for the secretary, and with me is Sarah Fazina.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Nice to have you back. Mr. Stoltz.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Stoltz, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes, please.
Well, we'll make that happen. And so, Mr. Stoltz, the floor is yours whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Judge Allen, Your Honors, and may it please the court. At page 12 of the record, the board found that the veteran submitted substantial evidence that reflects a widespread problem with VA not mailing correspondence. This favorable finding and the evidence in this case can lead to only one conclusion. VA does not get the presumption that it sent the statement of the case to the veteran's representative. There are two ways the court can get to that conclusion. One, VA's mailing practices are not regular, and as a threshold matter, the presumption of regularity does not attach in Ms. Romero's case. Two, even if that presumption attaches, Ms. Romero has rebutted it. Either way,
Mr. Stoltz,
the board's...
Good morning. This is Judge Falvey. Is there any practical difference which of those two ways to get to it you described that the court relies on? I mean, it seems to me it gets to the same thing. If there's no regular practice or that practice was not followed in an individual case, the burden shifts to the secretary and the secretary has to demonstrate actual mailing effectively. Is there any practical difference?
For Ms. Romero, no, there is no practical difference, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The court should, Your Honor, find the presumption never attached here because, as it recently noted in Krumlich, for the presumption of regularity to apply, there must first be some evidence of regular process. The secretary cites to no predicate evidence that there is any regularity in VA mailing. The secretary instead points to a statute and a regulation that should be followed. But what the evidence in this case, what the board's findings in this case demonstrate is that VA does not follow the rules with enough regularity to justify a presumption. There's no evidence to counter appellant submissions and certainly nothing that overcomes the board's favorable findings. This court, furthermore, cannot reweigh the evidence. The court should find on de novo review that Ms. Romero's substantive appeal was timely filed or alternatively remand the matter with an instruction that the board adjudicate this case under the correct law while retaining its favorable finding as to the widespread problem of VA mailing. Even if the court finds that the presumption attaches, Ms. Romero has rebutted it. The court has long recognized that an appellate may rebut the presumption of regularity by producing clear evidence that VA did not follow its railing mailing practices or those practices are not regular.
Mr. Stoltz, this is Judge Allen. Could I stop you before you're moving to what I consider to be step two, which is the rebuttal part, to stick with the first part, which is does the presumption of regularity attach at all? Are you aware of any cases in which we're dealing with a government entity as opposed to regular practices in, say, private entities, so a government entity, in which a court has required the government to establish anything more than that, A, they are the government, and B, they do the thing at issue, here, mailing? In other words, I understand that we said in a footnote in Krumlich about a predicate, but I have not been able to find a case involving any agency of the United States government in which a federal court has required something more at the first step as opposed to in the rebuttal step.
Your Honor, I'm not aware of anything directly to Your Honor's question, but I'm also not aware of a case that has a GAO report and the, you know, unquestioned affidavits that were submitted in a case like this, and, you know, the voluminous amount of demonstrations that the government has failed in its mailing. But the answer to your question is no, I have not found a case directly to Your Honor's point.
Because it strikes me that, and this goes a little bit to your answer to Judge Falvey, that the ultimate outcome, as you say, may be exactly the same for Ms. Romero, but the burden of establishing something is significantly different, because your first argument is the government needs to themselves establish something under what I'm calling step one, that the presumption exists. If we move to step two, rebuttal, that burden shifts to you, and the burden is actually heightened, right, because it becomes clear evidence. So do you agree with that sort of conception of how the procedural landscape would work?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
In Ms. Romero's case, moving to what Your Honor said was the second part of the argument. In Ms. Romero's case, there is the unchallenged and implicitly accepted testimony that the law firm CCK did not receive the SOC by mail, along with credible evidence of widespread mailing problems dating to at least 2015. VA personnel, when presented with this evidence, never offered a rebuttal to these facts. The court has, since its early history, accepted evidence like this to rebut the presumption. It did so again very recently in Krumlich, when it noted the Secretary's concession that he cannot demonstrate proper mailing of the SOC. The Secretary's argument is that disabled veterans and their families can rebut the presumption only by demonstrating the mail was addressed incorrectly. But the ability to rebut the presumption is not so narrowly defined. Ms. Romero has demonstrated a general deficiency in mailing practices, which satisfies the rebuttal standard of the irregular mailing practices. The court should hold that predicate evidence of regular mailing practices is required for the presumption of regularity to attach to a VA mailing, and either reverse the board's finding that the presumption of regularity attached, or reverse the finding that the presumption was not rebutted. The court should then hold that the substantive appeal was timely filed and order the board to address Ms. Romero's case on the merits. Alternatively, the court should retain the board's favorable finding as to the widespread problems with VA mailing, vacate the remainder of the board's decision, and remand the appeal with an instruction that the board re-adjudicate the case based on the correct interpretation of the presumption of regularity, using evidence, not assumptions, and not the erroneous standard that applied here.
Mr. Stoltz, this is Judge Allen again.
Go ahead, Judge Allen.
No, definitely go ahead, Judge Meredith.
Oh, thank you. This is Judge Meredith. If we were to agree that in this particular case, the presumption has been rebutted by clear evidence of record of system-wide problems, what impact would that have on future cases? Is your view that that would preclude VA from relying on the presumption of regularity with respect to mailings in the future, or would it depend in the future on the particular evidence in each case?
If the court were to find, Your Honor, that Ms. Romero rebutted the presumption, it would only apply to this case, but it would add to the case law, of course, as Your Honor knows, and as the parties know, because we cited a lot of them, there are many cases. This would be another example of ways to rebut the presumption.
Right, but you're asking us to rebut the presumption based on a finding that the process is irregular. So if we were to make that finding in rebutting, in saying that the presumption was rebutted, does it have no future consequences in terms of the applicability of the presumption itself?
Yes, it would, Your Honor. It would have future applicability. The Secretary has not taken, to my knowledge, any attempts to cure what its own board found to be widespread mailing irregularities. And that's something that, circling back to Judge Falvey, and hopefully will help to answer your question, Judge Meredith, that is so different about this, I'm sorry, and Judge Allen, that is so different about this case from other cases where the government asserts the presumption, is that the board here acknowledged, which is the agency itself, acknowledging these widespread problems. And so if the court were to find that in this case, going forward, I would imagine that the presumption would be more easily, would be less easily asserted by the secretary.
Thank you.
Mr. Stokes, this is Judge Falvey. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. This is Judge Falvey. I was going to have kind of a follow-up to that. It strikes me that the GAO report doesn't say what the board said it says, and that were it not a favorable finding, I think that we could arguably find it clearly erroneous. Is it what you're saying that that because it's favorable, we can't reverse it, and that in essence it's kind of the law or it's the law of the case for this one, that the board said the practice is irregular, and that the secretary could in later cases dispute the GAO report, or at least the conclusion that the board in this case drew from it, and that it could be contested in future cases, but for now we're stuck with how the board characterized it. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor, partially. I completely agree with Your Honor's analysis. I would say, though, that at page 12 of the record, and I know that the secretary, argues that the appellant is relying on that GAO report. It's not just the GAO report. It's the affidavit of Mr. Chisholm. It's the affidavit of Ms. Rauber. It's the history of this that has become more and more well-known at appellant's bar, frankly. But, yes, in future cases, the court would not be as bound as it is here by the favorable finding, as Your Honor phrases it, that is at issue in this case.
Right, but I understand those affidavits as well, but it seems that your argument hinges largely on that GAO report and this finding by the board, which, I read the GAO report, and I don't read it the same way that the board read it. So to the extent your argument hinges on the report, it could be challenged in future litigation. Other litigants could, the secretary could take a different position or argue a different position with respect to that report in future cases. They just didn't do it here at the board level, or at least didn't do so successfully.
Yes, Your Honor. Further, the Department of Veterans Affairs could undertake efforts to fix its mailing practices. That would also help them to reestablish the presumption of regularity in cases going forward.
Thank you.
Mr. Stokes, this is Judge Allen. I've got a couple of questions that really focus on the board decision. What do you understand the board to have done with respect to the evidence you submitted? And what I mean is the GAO report and the two declarations. Because it seems to me there's two ways to look at what the board did. One is it categorically said this is not claimant specific, and therefore it doesn't go into the equation at all. Or one could say it's not claimant specific, and so it is less weighty as evidence. Do you have a view on which of the two things the board did?
I think the latter, Your Honor. I think that the board said that it's not weighty because it doesn't speak specifically to Ms. Romero, and I'm talking about, Your Honor, the GAO report, not necessarily the affidavit from Mr. Chisholm, which is more directly on point. But that's a misstatement of the law that there needs to be. I actually don't really know what the board would want in order to find this, especially since it didn't really offer anything to rebut the evidence appellant submitted. So I think it's the latter, Your Honor.
And second, this follows a little bit on the questions that Judge Valdi was asking about the board's statement about the systemic problem. If we treat that as a factual finding, okay, mm-hmm. The board, it seems to me, there's nothing in the decision that supports the finding. And not that we could review it if it's a factual finding. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that since this is de novo, we could do this de novo. Do you agree that we might be hampered because we don't know the predicate factual determinations that the board made to reach its ultimate conclusion?
No, because there's a lot of focus being placed on this GAO report. The way I read the board's decision, Your Honor, is that there is some specificity in the affidavits that were submitted and that are of record, as well as the GAO report. And at page 12, the board acknowledges that. That does appear to be the factual underpinning of its favorable finding of fact.
Well, here's what I was thinking about, right, which is that VA mails a lot of stuff, right? And one could say that the evidence, leave aside the GAO report for a moment, that the evidence submitted by Mr. Chisholm and Ms. Robert, that if one were comparing that evidence to all the mailing the VA does of everything in the world, it might be quite small. However, if you change the denominator and what you look at is only, for example, mailing to representatives, not who are not also VSOs, okay, that changes the equation somewhat. Would you agree with that?
I do, Your Honor.
So that's what I'm struggling with. We have this very strange to me finding of systemic problems that then apparently sort of disappears in the board's decision. We might be bound by that finding, but yet I can't tell exactly the analysis the board went through to get there. This is all winding up to say, if we agree with you, wouldn't it be better to remand for the board to at least articulate its reasoning?
No, Your Honor, because the board has had its chance at weighing the evidence, and your analysis is something that I do agree with. When you start talking about these raw numbers, you could start saying, with the millions mailed, what does look irregular, what does not? The board did none of that. It already made this favorable finding, and so reversal, that ship sailed for VA. Appellant is the one who presented all this evidence. And I would look to the Kine case to support what I'm telling Your Honor, or what I'm submitting to Your Honor. I would look to the Kine case that there's no more evidence really to be weighed here. I would also say, and I will acknowledge this, it's a closer call if the court really wants to only look at appellant's first argument. But as to the second argument, whether Ms. Romero rebutted the presumption, that is a reversal. There's nothing that really goes to what I'm saying. There is nothing that the secretary submitted here, and there's nothing more for the board to do in Ms. Romero's case as to rebuttal. I think it's a closer call, Your Honor, with Your Honor's question.
Thanks.
If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Judge Meredith, do you have any other questions at this point?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Valvey?
Just one. Mr. Stoltz, can you point to anything in the GAO report where it says the VA is ineffective in
mailing?
Yes, Your Honor. Page 167. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Page 167 of the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is, VA is not managing its program effectively, as it lacks key elements of an effective mail management program, including having reliable data on mail volume and expenditures, agency-wide performance measures, and mail managers with appropriate authority and responsibilities. That says to me ineffective mailing.
Okay, so that's as close as you get?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. Mr. Morris?
Thank you, Your Honors. Ronan Morris, the Secretary. May it please the Court. Your Honors, like all public officers, the Secretary is presumed to have properly discharged his official duties, absent clear evidence to the contrary. He is therefore presumed to have mailed a copy of the August 2017 Statement of the Case to Counsel, because that is what his official duties legally required him to do. And moreover, because the evidence appellant submitted is anecdotal and fails to establish any fact relevant to this specific case, it is not clear evidence sufficient to rebut the presumption. Your Honors, there are essentially three significant points here. The first, Your Honors, is that because the presumption of regularity in this case is premised on a specific legal duty, evidence of a regular practice is not required or even relevant. Second, the only evidence needed to trigger the presumption that the Secretary complied with his legal duty and mailed a copy of the Statement of the Case to counsel is of the existence of the Statement of the Case, which is not in dispute. And third, Your Honors, again, because the evidence submitted by appellant offers no clear or direct proof as to what the Secretary did or did not do in this specific case, it is insufficient as a matter of law to rebut the presumption of regularity as applied in this case. Your Honors, the presumption of regularity in this case arises out of a legal obligation established by independent legal authority and thus does not require an evidentiary foundation. And case law makes this clear. It distinguishes between where the presumption is based on a legal obligation, you know, which is established by law, and where it's based on a regular practice, a discretionary practice that has to first be shown to exist. And indeed, the Federal Circuit emphasized this distinction in Kine v. Shinseki. When it compared the presumption of regularity as intended to apply in that case to presume that the Secretary performed a non-mandatory task and mailed the appellant a notice of a scheduled examination, with the presumption of regularity as applied in cases like Miley v. Principi and Butler v. Principi, to presume that the Secretary acted consistent with his legal duties under statutory section 7105B1 and 5104A and respectively mailed the veterans in those cases notifications of rating decisions and appellate rights. So that is the basis of the presumption. And the only evidence that was needed to trigger the presumption in this case was that the SOC was created, because that creation is what led to the Secretary's duty to mail it. The Secretary was legally obligated to mail it, and therefore, under the presumption of regularity, he is presumed to have complied with his legal duties and, in fact, mailed a copy of that statement of the case. Your Honors, if we just jump quickly ahead, you know, to the rebuttal point, and I will get back to any of the more nuanced points, but the evidence that the appellant submitted in this case is insufficient to rebut this presumption, which again exists, you know, by independent legal authority. It's insufficient to rebut the presumption because it's general in nature and offers no proof of any fact directly related to the Secretary's action in this case. Indeed, it's primarily anecdotal. The touchstone to determining whether a party has established clear evidence to rebut the presumption of regularity is specificity. Does the evidence at a minimum specifically refute the fact presumed to be true? In other words, does it show that the specific statement of the case created in this case was not mailed to counsel, or does it otherwise establish irregularities with respect to its specific mailing in this case? And the answer to that is no.
Mr. Morris, this is Judge Allen, if I could jump in right at that point. Do you agree, or does the Secretary agree that, I'm going to call it general evidence, okay, is still germane to the analysis, or are you taking the position that non-claimant-specific evidence is irrelevant?
It is germane to the analysis. However, there needs to be a specific nexus to the case. Simply general evidence cannot meet the legal standard of clear evidence. And as in this case,
the evidence does not clearly establish any fact relevant to the secretary's actions. In fact, Your Honors, the evidence in this case supports multiple possible and even mutually exclusive inferences. And if we take, you know, the affidavit, those inferences could be ranged from anything from counsel has poor mail intake practices to poor record keeping or filing to maybe mail was lost after delivery to the theft of mail to misdelivery by the post office to any non-receipt due to any number of factors that don't implicate the secretary's proper mailing. And evidence that's capable of supporting multiple valid inferences is clearly not clear evidence of any of those inferences. So while it may be germane, again, there's no tie-in to the specific case. And the very essence of the presumption of regularity is that we presume what happened in this case absent clear evidence to the contrary.
And so what do we do with this finding, I'll call it, that the board appears to have made? This is not a particularly articulate question, but what is your take on that? How do we deal with that?
If Your Honor is referring to the statement that despite the substantial evidence that the veterans representative has provided that reflects a widespread problem with VA not mailing correspondence, first, Your Honor, I don't believe it's properly characterized as an actual finding of fact. It's the board's recognition of the evidence. It acknowledged that there was a quantum of evidence on something, but the board did not find that VA does not have the VA actually, you know, has any issues related to its mailing practice. Certainly not with respect, you know, that it doesn't have, a tendency to not mail.
Let me just stop you there, and because this is obviously an important question. How do I know that from this decision? Right, because it does seem to me that there are two ways to look at it. One is what you've said, right? It acknowledged and recognized evidence that was in the record without itself doing any work. Or you can read that to say it actually did the work, right? Meaning that it looked at the evidence and reached a factual conclusion. And if it did that, we're sort of stuck with it. But how do we tell that from the board decision?
I believe when read in context, if we go back a page of the board decision where the board actually discusses the GAO report and then on this page where the board discusses the affidavits, I think it's pretty clear that what the board did was not only just generally summarize the evidence, but it in fact gave the appellant here the most, you know, the biggest benefit of the doubt, because the board then immediately dismissed it. The board found that it wasn't clear evidence of anything. And in fact, Your Honor, that's also relevant to whether this is considered or accepted as a finding of fact. The board found it irrelevant. It noted it, but found it irrelevant. So there's nothing to it at all. In fact, even if we assume that it is a fact and that it, you know, it's an objectively neutral fact, which means that the court is not bound by it. It's only favorable to the appellant because his litigation strategy is premised on it, but it's not objectively favorable. It is a neutral fact. But finally, Your Honor, to answer the question, I don't think it's necessary to even get that far, because even if we accept the statement, first, I mean, the statement on its face merely indicates widespread problems. Widespread simply goes to the breadth of the problem. And if it's based on the GAO report, which, again, discussed cost effectiveness, not a failure to mail, but the GAO report considered the entire department. So widespread simply means that the problem might touch, and the cost effectiveness problem in this case, might touch on VHA or an outpatient clinic sending prescription medication just as well as it might, might have affected an RO in a different place. So that's widespread problems. But, Your Honors, even if the evidence certainly doesn't support the appellant's the facts that the appellant states. But even if we looked at it in its most, you know, liberal view, that we assume that the widespread mailing issues include a failure to mail, which is entirely unsubstantiated, and we look at the affidavit and they relate to a total of 1,135 incidents of reported non-receipt of case-related documents. And even if we assume that that non-receipt in every one of those cases involved an actual failure to mail, which, again, is entirely unsubstantiated, we're still left with no actual relevant information because the information is provided with no context. The mere fact that something might have occurred in the past does not make it more likely to have occurred, you know, at present. And if we look at Mr. Chisholm's affidavit, 863 instances since July 2015, so over a span of 5 years, where the secretary purportedly failed to mail a case-related document. Mr. Chisholm doesn't disclose how many times case-related documents were received, so it's a number without any context. Ms. Rubar states that she solicited information from NOVA, and she received seven responses totaling 272 incidents. Ms. Rubar does not disclose how many members did not respond with incidents, and she does not disclose either the number of case-related documents received by all of her members or even the number of case-related documents received by those who did respond with incidents. So, Your Honor, we are left with useless information, essentially, numbers. There's no context. But, Your Honor, if we actually do provide it with some context, the only context that is available in this case is contained in the GAO report itself, which indicates that VA mails over 200 million pieces of outgoing mail every year. So if the affidavits are intended to show that there's some high likelihood that a piece of intended mail is not sent or that the secretary has no regular mailing practice, it results in an error rate of 0.000002. And I recognize that the denominator may not be accurate, but
Mr. Morris,
Your Honor, it goes – yes. Mr. Your Honor.
Hi, this is Judge Falvey. So, but how do we, Judge Allen asked this question of appellant's counsel, how do we know that the board, that's how the board got to its conclusion without the board having set forth its reasoning for rejecting the affidavit, rejecting the GAO report?
I believe that we can derive that just from the face of the evidence itself, and the evidence is very clear that the GAO report on its face does not include any information about a failure to mail. The only incidents that we have here are the incidents that the appellant has identified as non-receipt. So there's a lot of assumptions that we have to make, but at the end of the day, I don't know that it matters because the board is legally correct that no matter how that evidence is interpreted, it is not clear evidence to rebut the presumption because it does not clearly establish any fact related to this case. And ultimately, that's what the board found.
Well,
and
so sure, the evidence may not be specific to this case, but Crane and I think Ashley too talks in terms of when the appellant submits clear evidence to the effect that the BVA's, in that case it was a board decision, but I think it applies equally to SOCs, that the VA's regular mailing practices are not regular or that they weren't followed in this case. I mean, so it seems like what they're trying to argue is that first aspect, that the practices, the regular practices on which the presumption is based are not regular. And it's the rejection of that and the focus solely on the specific evidence in Ramiro's case that is where the board potentially erred. Am I misreading Ashley and Crane?
With due respect, I don't believe that you're misreading them, but I believe that they're being misapplied to the extent that the Your Honor is suggesting. Ashley, which is where that language, or Ashley 2 is where that language, I believe, came from. That language has to be read in context. It also has to be read in context with the law. But most importantly here, we don't have a regular practice in this case. The Secretary is not arguing that is not asserting, you know, to the court, draw an inference because I have this practice where I typically mail out statements of the case or where I typically put things in a mailbox. The secretary is not asserting that. Therefore, evidence that the practice is irregular is irrelevant. It's a non sequitur. It's a legal fallacy to equate a legal obligation with a discretionary practice. And that ultimately is what was at issue in Ashley. The original presumption in Ashley started based on the legal obligation. The secretary was presumed to have mailed a copy of the board decision to the veteran's representative because that's what he was required by law to do. The appellant in that case was the appellant then submitted evidence of a regular practice that the secretary had, which was to indicate the representative and put a copy of that in the claims file, and that did not exist. So the appellant demonstrated the regular practice and with a nexus to the specific case because there was no copy of the decision with the representative in the claims file, and the court in Ashley 1 found that that was the clear evidence that rebutted the presumption. But again, nothing undermined the attachment of the presumption itself that the secretary complied with his legal duties. The added nuances of Ashley were that the secretary then ultimately came back and said, no, that's not our regular practice. We actually have a more specific regular practice, and an even more specific one when it comes to the two entities, VVA and NVLSP, where when one hires the other, we still send it to this particular one. And that's where the appellant came back and submitted evidence saying that that's not true. And it was in that regard, in that context, where the court found that the secretary had no practice or that at best its practice was irregular. So it was a derivative of a derivative. It was the presumption is effectively had been, you know, there was clear evidence to rebut the presumption that the secretary complied with the law. The secretary tried to undermine the practice that the appellants proved with evidence of a different practice that the court ultimately found wasn't a practice. So that's where the language derives from, and that's the context that language has to be read in. But admittedly, Your Honor, if the secretary here was relying on a practice, such as in kind, where the secretary said, presume that the appellant received a copy of a notification of his examination because we regularly send out notification letters of that sort. It's not legally required. And so there's no way of knowing that that's the secretary's duty unless the secretary proves it with evidence and the court finds it to exist as a fact. That's not what we have here. We do not have a case where the secretary is relying on some discretionary practice where he has to prove it and that the appellant can challenge it and the court can either find, no, there is no such regular practice, or that the appellant can then show that this practice was irregularly applied in this particular case. Does that answer Your Honor's question? I think I went off on a tangent.
Go ahead, Judge Fowley.
Well, I'm not sure that it does, but you can go ahead, Judge Meredith.
Okay, thank you. This is Judge Meredith. So assuming that we believe that showing any regular practice could be pertinent in this case, the appellant here has been arguing since at least 2007 that the presumption of regularity shouldn't apply, and then it may have been rebutted if it does, and has submitted evidence, including the affidavits, and the board recognized this, where they say that VA acknowledged problems in mailing documents to representatives and was making changes to try to address those problems. So in light of the evidence and the arguments that have been made since 2017 in this case, did VA have an obligation to come forward with some type of information or evidence about its mail practices to, in essence, show that they could be regular? Or that they are regular?
No. Your Honor, I have two points to that. The first, again, is the more fundamental point that evidence that something does not always occur is not evidence of an irregular practice. In fact, the presumption of regularity itself expects non-performance. It is a rebuttable presumption. So it anticipates that there will be instances where performance is not done. In fact, Your Honor, the presumption not only expects this, but it actually tolerates error. It's the quid pro quo for allowing the government to function, that it does not, because it would grind to a halt if the government had to scrupulously document every single action that it that it took. So that's the first fundamental problem, is that the evidence here doesn't show that the secretary doesn't regularly mail things. It shows instances where it has not occurred. And in fact, if it was such a problem, I mean, it is something for, you know, essentially for Congress to fix. But going further with that, though, the secretary doesn't have to show anything because there's nothing to disprove. And again, the argument here isn't that the secretary hasn't complied with the practice. So let's say, you know, if the SOC in this case didn't have the appellant's address on it, then there would be an irregularity because we know that the secretary has a practice of, you know, putting the address on it. And then if the secretary came back and said,
this is Judge Meredith.
I'm sorry.
Sorry to interrupt you. So I take it your position is that VA had no obligation to come forward in this case with any evidence of a practice. And I don't believe there's anything in the record that shows where VA has tried to prove that actual mailing took place in this case. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry. I missed the last part of that. I apologize, Your Honor.
Has VA, is there anything in the record that could demonstrate actual mailing took place in this case?
Actual mailing? No. I mean, all the indicia of actual mailing is there, meaning that there is a copy of the statement of the case in the record. There's a notification letter attached to it, correctly identifies counsel, it correctly identifies counsel's address, and the appellant himself received a copy of, you know, the statement of the case. But the very essence of the presumption is that it assumes that the government is not able to prove those facts because, again, it would just be too onerous on the government. Therefore, we presume that the government did what it was supposed to do.
This is Judge Meredith. So if we were to find that the presumption, well, let me back up a step. Is there any evidence anywhere in your electronic file that actual mailing to this attorney took place? Does VA know whether this document was mailed?
No, Your Honor. Again, beyond the telltale signs of mailing, which is the inclusion of the SOC in the notification letter with the appellant's counsel's name and address in the record, no. And I'm not even sure what that evidence, you know, would entail. You know, how the secretary even could prove that beyond, you know, beyond that type of evidence, which again, is not necessary in this case, but it does actually exist. There's every indication in this case is that the secretary complied with all of his regular practices. Those practices are not actually in dispute here, but every indication is that he did that. All we have in this case is the appellant's, you know, is evidence of poor cost effectiveness in VA mailing operations. And we have affidavits that attest to a number of times, a high number, you know, of times where something was not received. But again, one, it's a leap of logic to assume that all those incidents actually involved a failure to mail. It's a leap of logic
to assume. This is Judge Meredith, jump in on that point. So the board decision record at 12, it talks about one of the documents submitted by the appellant's counsel. And this is the board said, VA personnel acknowledged VA's continued failure to consistently mail representatives copies of their claims decisional documents. And as far as I know, VA has not put forth and has not contested that statement that was in the affidavit. And I believe you just acknowledged that you don't know whether the statement in the case was in fact mailed to us. So why is VA contesting the timeliness of this veteran's substance appeal?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, I guess a better way to answer the question is I know that VA mailed a copy of the statement of the case to the appellant the same way that the court knows, because the law presumes that the secretary did it. And that's all that is required here. You know, that is the purpose of the presumption. So I know that is a fact. It is a fact. The secretary had a legal obligation, and he's presumed to have done that. So that fact exists. It only does not exist if it's rebutted with clear evidence to the contrary. And that has not occurred. There is no – to suggest that the secretary would have to prove affirmatively that it was mailed without the clear evidence to rebut the presumption that he did it, it eviscerates the presumption itself. It moves right to the third step of the presumption, which is not applicable here. And to suggest that the secretary in some way should have rebutted the appellant's evidence, as the appellant seems to suggest, again, the secretary doesn't need to rebut evidence. It's the appellant's job to rebut the presumption. And the appellant's evidence demonstrates nothing. Your Honors, again, let's assume that there are 1,135 incidents where the secretary didn't mail something over the course of 5 years. Out of a total of how many documents that the secretary has mailed, even to this very council, his statistic, one, is not a statistic because it has no context, but even if we assumed it to be, it's an irrelevant one. It shows simply that something has not occurred in the past. And if incidents of non-performance could rebut the presumption of regularity in a particular case, if incidents in different cases could rebut it in a particular case, there would be no presumption anymore. It would always be rebutted because there will always be incidents of non-performance because, again, the very nature of the rebuttable presumption of regularity is that it expects that the presumed act will not have always occurred. At the end of the day, the appellant's argument here, it really reduces to one thing. He doesn't want this. He believes that the secretary should not be presumed to have mailed a copy of the statement of the case because, in his view, the secretary cannot be expected to comply with his duty to do that. But even ignoring the fact that there's no evidentiary basis for this proposition at all, what the argument really is an attack on the foundation of the doctrine, the attack on the foundation that public officials are presumed to properly discharge their duties. But the validity of the doctrine, whether it is fair or premised even on reality, is not for this court to decide. The law is that government officials are presumed to properly discharge their duties here. The secretary had a duty to mail the statement of the case to counsel. Therefore, he is presumed to have done so. Appellant's anecdotal evidence does not clearly or directly establish any fact relevant to what the secretary did in this case and is not by any means clear evidence sufficient to rebut the presumption of regularity in this case. Again, Your Honors, the secretary is presumed to have mailed the copy of the statement of the case because, like all public officials, he's presumed to have properly discharged his duties. The evidence presented in
this
case— Yes, Your Honor.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just have one more question for you. If we were to find that the presumption had been rebutted and that VA has not come forward with any evidence of actual mailing, would VA concede that the substantive appeal should be considered timely based on counsel's assertion that he first learned of the statement of the case on November 2nd, or would we need to remand for the board to determine when the 60-day period started to run?
Your Honor, and neither. I believe it would still need to go back to the board. When Your Honor asked if there was, like, you know, actual evidence, again, there's no photograph of it being put into the mail. There's no tracking number on it, but it is still well within, you know, reason for the board to find that it was in fact mailed based on all the circumstantial evidence. Again, it being addressed properly and, the addressee being identified, the fact that the appellant got his, the fact that everything is in the claims file as it should be. So it is well within reason, in fact, compelling, you know, that it was in fact mailed. That's circumstantial evidence. If the court found that the presumption was rebutted, the appropriate remedy would be for it, for this case to go back to the board to make the requisite findings of fact as, to whether it was in fact mailed, because it didn't do that. And I believe for good reason, because I believe that the board was absolutely correct in its view of the law that no matter how this evidence is interpreted, it bears not on any specific fact in this case. It is not clear evidence that anything happened, so the board had no reason to engage in any further analysis. Your Honor, if that answers your question, and if there are no further questions, Your Honor, again, the evidence in this case neither can prevent the presumption from attaching because it arises from a legal duty, nor does it rebut the presumption. The very premise of appellant's arguments rests on unsubstantiated factual assertions and various legal fallacies. The reasons argued here and in the secretary's brief Your Honor, Secretary respectfully requests the board's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Judge Meredith, do you have any additional questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I do not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Stoltz, you can have your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. Since Ashley, the court has recognized that rebuttal of the presumption can be based on a combination of general information and more specific evidence. We have that here. It is not just the GAO report. It is not just an affidavit. It is evidence that the board accepted, made a favorable finding of fact about, that there are general problems with mailing. And then, specific to this case, appellant's counsel said he did not receive the statement of the case in the mail. That's all we need. That's all Ms. Romero needs. Ms. Romero should be allowed to continue to pursue her claim under the relevant case law, under the unrebutted evidence that was submitted in this case and that the board accepted. We ask for Ms. Romero to be able to pursue her claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Judge Meredith, do you have any questions on rebuttal?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I do not. Thanks.
Well, thank you to both parties for your helpful arguments this morning. And the case of Romero versus Wilkie is submitted for decision.
The court is in recess.